Mountain State Mysteries contains adult content that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm your host, Mark.
And I'm Courtney.
And this is Mountain State Mysteries. The case we have for you today is about a man whose name became synonymous with organized crime in Boston. This is the case of James Whitey Bulger. James Joseph Whitey Bulger Jr. was born on September 3, 1929 in Boston, Massachusetts, to Jane Veronica Jean McCarthy and James Joseph Bulger Sr. Whitey grew up in the rough streets of South Boston. Whitey's father worked as a union laborer, an occasional longshoreman. He ended up losing his arm in an industrial accident. After that, his family was reduced to poverty. In May of 1938, the Mary Ellen McCormick Housing Project was opened in the neighborhood of South Boston. The Bulger family moved in, and the children grew up there. While his younger siblings William and John excelled in school, James was drawn to the streets.
This early criminal career, police nicknamed him Whitey, which he actually hated. He preferred to be called Jim, Jimmy, or Boots. The nickname Boots actually came from his habit of wearing cowboy boots, which is where he used to hide a switchblade. Whitey gained the reputation as a thief and a street fighter. This led him to meet more experienced criminals and find more lucrative opportunities.
In 1943, 14-year-old Whitey was arrested and charged with larceny. He joined a street gang known as the Shamrocks. This would lead him to be arrested for assault, forgery, and armed robbery. Whitey was sentenced to a juvenile for all of these offenses. Not too long after his release, in April of 1948, Whitey joined the United States Air Force, where he earned his high school diploma, and he trained as a mechanic. Despite his reimagined military life, he was not reformed at all. He would actually spend some time in military prison for several assaults, and was later arrested by Air Force police in 1950, for going absent without leave. In 1952, he received an honorable discharge and returned to Massachusetts.
In 1956, Whitey served his first term in federal prison at the Atlanta Penitentiary for armed robbery and truck hijacking. While in there, he told mobster Kevin Weeks that he was used as a human subject in the CIA-sponsored MKUltra program. Whitey later complained that the inmates had been recruited by deception and were told they were helping to find a cure for schizophrenia, when in fact they were being used to research mind control. The evidence was later confirmed when the CIA documentation emerged. Whitey and 18 other inmates, who all volunteered in exchange for reduced sentences, were given LSD and other drugs over an 18-month period. He described the experience as nightmarish and said it took him to the depths of insanity, writing in his notebook that he heard voices and feared being committed for life if he told anyone this. In 1959, Whitey was briefly transferred to maximum security at Alcatraz Federal Penitentiary in California. During his time at Alcatraz, he kept in shape by weightlifting and took advantage of educational opportunities afforded to inmates. Whitey completed various correspondence courses, including typing, bookkeeping, and business law. Whitey also became a vicarious reader, devouring numerous books on poetry, politics, and military history. Later in his sentence, he was transferred to Leavenworth Federal Penitentiary and in 1963 to Lewisburg Federal Prison in Pennsylvania. Whitey's third petition for parole in 1965 was granted after he served 9 years in prison.
After his release, Whitey worked as a janitor and construction worker before becoming a bookmaker and a loan shark under mobster Donald Killian, whose gang, the Killians, had dominated South Boston for over 20 years. The Killians were led by three brothers, Donnie, Kenny, and Eddie, along with Billy O'Sullivan and Jack Curran. Their base was the Transit Cafe in South Boston, which later became Whitey's Triple O's. In 1971, the younger Killian brother Kenny allegedly shot mauled Michael Mickey Dyer, who was a member of the rival Mullen Gang, during a brawl at the Transit Cafe, which resulted in a gang war, leading to sting killings throughout Boston and the surrounding suburbs. The Killians quickly found themselves outgunned by the younger Mullins. During the war, Whitey set out to commit what Weeks describes as Bulger's first murder. A Mullen member, Paul McGonagall, instead executed McGonagall's law-abiding brother, Donald, in a case of mistaken identity. According to the former Mullen boss, Patrick Pat Nee, McGonagall ambushed and murdered O'Sullivan on the assumption he was the one responsible for his brother's killing. Whitey, realizing he was on the losing side, is alleged to have secretly approached Howie Winter, the leader Winter Hill Gang, and claimed he could end the war by murdering the Killian leadership. On May 13, 1972, Donald Killian was gunned down outside of his home in the suburb of Framingham, Massachusetts. Although the killing was attributed to Whitey, Nee disputed this, saying that Killian was murdered by Mullen enforcers James Mantfield and Tommy King, not Whitey. Whitey and the Killians fled Boston. They feared that they would be killed next.
After 1972, Whitey and the Mullins were in control of South Boston's criminal underworld. FBI agent Dennis Condon noted in his September 1973 log that Whitey and Nee had been heavily shaking down the neighborhood's bookmarks and loan sharks. Over the years that followed, Bulger began to remove opposition by persuading Winter to sanction the kills of those who, quote, stepped out of line, end quote. Winter recalled that the highly intelligent Bulger, quote, could teach the devil's tricks, end quote. During this era, Whitey's victims included Mullen veterans McGonagall, King, and James Spike O'Toole. In 1979, Winter was arrested, along with many members of his inner circle, on charges of fixing horse races. Whitey and Flemmy were left out of the indictments. They stepped into the power vacuum and took over the leadership of the Winter Hill Gang, transferring its headquarters to the Lancaster Street Garage in Boston's West End, near the Boston Garden.
In late August or early September 1974, Whitey and an accomplice reportedly set fire to an elementary school in Wellesley, Massachusetts, to intimidate U.S. District Court Judge Wendell Arthur Garrity Jr. over his mandated plan to desegregate schools in the city of Boston by means of busing. 1 year later, on September 8, 1975, Bulger and an unidentified person tossed a Molotov cocktail into the John F. Kennedy birthplace in Brookline in retaliation for Senator Ted Kennedy's vocal support for Boston schools' desegregation. Bulger used black spray paint to paint Bus Teddy on the sidewalk in front of the National Historic Site.
In 1971, the FBI approached Whitey and attempted to recruit him as an informant in an ongoing effort to gain any information they could on the Patricia crime family. John Connolly, an FBI agent that grew up in Whitey's neighborhood and knew him as a child. He was assigned to make the pitch. However, John failed to gain Whitey's trust. 3 years later, Whitey partnered with Flemmy, unaware that he had been an informant for the FBI since the beginning of his career in 1965. Even though it's a documented fact that Whitey followed Flemmy's example, why he did this is still debated to this day. John boasted to his fellow agents about how he had recruited Whitey at a late night meeting at Wollaston Beach while the two sat in his car. John allegedly said that the FBI could help in Whitey's feud with the Patricia underboss, Gennaro Angiulo. After his pitch, Whitey said, quote, "All right, if they want to play checkers, we'll play chess," end quote. FBI supervisor John Morris was put in charge of the organized crime squad at the FBI's Boston field office in December of 1977. Morris not only proved himself unable to rein in John's protection of Whitey, but even began assisting him. By 1982, Morris was thoroughly compromised to the point of having Whitey purchase plane tickets for his then-girlfriend Debbie Noseworthy to visit him in Georgia while he was being trained for drug investigation. In 1983, when Morris was transferred to head up Boston's FBI Anti-Drug Task Force, he remained an accomplice to John and Whitey. During the summer of 1983, tensions between the Winter Hill Gang and the Patricia family escalated to an all-time high. An employee for Coin-O-Matic, a coin laundering vending machine company owned by the Patricias, was kidnapped on the job. The Boston Police Department operated on a tip, raided a butcher shop in South Boston co-owned by Whitey and two other Winter Hill members. Police found the victim hanging from a beef rack, having been tortured and held for more than 6 days. The victim would never testify. Over the next few months, three low-level Winter Hill Gang soldiers were executed, mostly believed to be retribution for kidnapping. The conflict shined a huge spotlight on Morris's incompetent management and caused an internal investigation within the FBI. In 1988, Whitey, as an FBI informant, was revealed publicly when the Globe Spotlight team, which was led by journalist Gerard O'Neill, published a story detailing the numerous crimes committed and attributed to him while nominally under the protection of the FBI. Rumors came around before then, since it was unheard of a criminal like Whitey to go years without a single arrest. In 1995, Whitey and Flemmy were indicted on racketeering charges, along with Frank Salim and Bobby DeLuca. During the discovery phones of the investigation, Salim and DeLuca were listening to a tape from a roving bug. They overheard two of the agents who were listening in on the bug mention offhandedly that they should have not told one of their informants to give a list of questions while speaking to the mobsters. When their lawyer, Tony Cardinale, learned about this, he realized that the FBI had lied about the basis for the big in order to protect one of the informants. Suspecting that this was not the first time that this had happened, Cardinale sought to force prosecutors to reveal the identities of the informants used in connection to this case. On June 3rd, Paul E. Coffey, who was the head of the organized crime and racketeering section of the Department of Justice, gave a sworn statement admitting that Whitey had been an FBI informant. Coffey stated that since Whitey was accused of leasing a criminal enterprise while working as an informant, was also now a known fugitive. He was forfeited in a reasonable expectation that his identity would be protected. On September 5th, 2006, federal judge Reginald C. Lindsay ruled that the mishandling of Bulger and Flemmy Cowles, the 1984 murder of police informant John McIntyre, awarding his family $3.1 million $1 million in damages. He stated that the FBI failed to properly supervise Conley and stick its head in the sand regarding numerous allegations that Whitey and Flemmy were involved in drug trafficking, murder, and other crimes for decades.
In later years, there was actually a manhunt for Whitey. The first confirmed sighting of Whitey before his capture was in London in 2002. It was by a businessman who was actually watching the movie Hannibal when he recognized a photograph of Whitey in a scene featuring the website of the FBI's most wanted fugitives. There were unconfirmed sightings elsewhere as well. At one point, FBI agents were sent to Uruguay to investigate a lead, while other agents were sent to stake out the 60th anniversary celebrations of the Battle of Normandy. As Whitey was said to be an enthusiastic fan of military history, later reports talked about a sighting in Italy in April 2007, which was proved to be false. Two people on video footage in Taormina, Sicily, Whitey, Greg, walking the streets of the city center. They were later identified as a tourist couple from Germany. In 2010, the FBI geared its focus to Victoria, British Columbia, on Vancouver Island. In pursuit for Whitey, who was a known book lover, the FBI visited bookstores in the area, questioned employees, and distributed wanted posters. Following his arrest, Whitey revealed that instead of being reclusive, he had in fact traveled frequently, with witnesses coming forward to say that they had seen him on the Santa Monica Pier and other places in Southern California. A confirmed report by an off-duty Boston police officer after a San Diego screening also led to a search of Southern California.
After Whitey's 16 years at large and 12 years on the FBI's 10 most wanted fugitives list, Whitey was arrested in Santa Monica, California on June 22, 2011. He was 81 years old. Whitey was captured as a result of the work of the Bulger Fugitive Task Force, which consisted of FBI agents, a deputy U.S. Marshal. According to retired FBI agent Scott Bakken, quote, "Here you have somebody who's more sophisticated than some 18-year-old who killed someone in a drive-by. To be a successful fugitive, you have to cut all contacts from your previous life. He had the means and kept a low profile," end quote. A $2 million reward had been offered for information leading to his capture. This was second to Osama bin Laden's capture reward on the FBI's 10 most wanted list. Whitey was actually featured on the TV show America's Most Wanted 16 times, first in 1995 and the last on October 2, 2010. According to authorities, the arrests were a direct result of the media campaign launched by the FBI in 14 television markets across the country where Bulger and Greg reportedly had ties. The campaign focused on Greg, describing her as an animal lover who frequently went to beauty salons. Authorities received a tip from a woman in Iceland that Whitey was living in an apartment near a beach in Santa Monica. Anna Bjorn's daughter, a former model, actress, and Miss Iceland of 1974, lived in Whitey's neighborhood. A day later, using the ruse, agents and other task force members lured Whitey out of his apartment, arrested him without incident. They went into the home and arrested Greg. Bulger was charged with murder, conspiracy to commit murder, extortion, narcotics, distribution, and money laundering. Agents found more than $800,000 in cash, 30 firearms, and fake IDs all around the apartment. U.S. Attorney Carmen Ortiz for the District of Massachusetts said, quote, "She believes in the death penalty. It's not an option in the federal charges Whitey faces in her district. but that he could face the death penalty for two cases outside of the district, end quote. They were in Oklahoma, where Whitey is alleged to have ordered the killing of businessman Roger Wheeler Sr. In 1981, Tulsa County District Attorney Tim Harris said, quote, "It is our intention to bring Whitey to justice and to be held accountable for the murder of Mr. Wheeler," end quote. In Florida, Miami-Dade State Attorney Catherine Fernandez Rundle said, quote, "After a 16-year delay, I will be working to ensure that the Miami..." In Florida, Miami-Dade State Attorney Catherine Fernandez Rundle said, quote, "After a 16-year delay, I will be working to ensure that a Miami jury has the opportunity to look Whitey in the eyes and determine his fate." Right after Whitey was brought back to Boston, he began talking to authorities. He said that during his day as a fugitive, he often went back and forth across the border to Mexico to buy medication for his heart disease. Many anticipated and some feared that Whitey, in exchange for his favorable treatment and sentencing, would have much more to tell authorities about. Corruption at the local, state, and federal levels, which allowed him to operate his criminal enterprise for so long. Whitey was arraigned in federal court on July 6, 2011. He pleaded not guilty to 49 charges, including 19 counts of murder, extortion, money laundering, obstruction of justice, perjury, narcotics distribution, and weapons violations. In 2011, Kevin Weeks expressed surprise at Bulger's decision to cooperate after his arrest. Weeks said, quote, "I don't understand because he's not the same as I remember him. I can't believe he's so chatty right now, so I don't know what he's doing," end quote. Weeks also added that he is not afraid of Whitey and that the residents of Boston shouldn't be either. "I don't think he's Pablo Escobar, where he can just walk out of his prison cell and come to the South Boston or anywhere. No, no one's worried about him," end quote.
According to an expert of the book on Whitey published by Boston Magazine, Whitey not only made a friend during his post-sentencing detention, Clement Chip Janis, a young convict who was trusted to run art classes for other convicts. When Whitey arrived at the United States Penitentiary in Tucson, Arizona, there were other famous inmates, including Brian David Mitchell, who is known as the man who kidnapped Elizabeth Smart, Stephen Dale Green, who is known for war crimes, Montoya Sanchez, who is known as a Colombian former crime boss and leader. According to Janice, Whitey was attacked by fellow inmate, nickname Retro, whose knife pierced Whitey's neck and skull, which sent him to the prison's infirmary for a month. Whether Whitey was targeted randomly or not is not known. Apparently, the inmate was not motivated by any personal issues with Whitey, but committed the near-fatal assault so that he would be sent to solitary confinement because he wanted to avoid paying for drugs that he acquired from other prisoners. At Coleman, Whitey started experiencing night terrors, which he said came from experiments he had taken part in while incarcerated in the 1950s, where he had been given LSD. Whitey, who started his imprisonment with rigorous exercise regimens, was in a wheelchair at this point.
On June 12, 2013, Whitey went on trial in South Boston's John Joseph Moale United States Courthouse before Judge Dennis J. Casper on 32 counts of racketeering and firearms possession. The racketeering counts included allegations that Whitey was complicit in 19 murders. The trial lasted 2 months and included the testimony of 72 witnesses. The jury began deliberations on August 6th. On August 12th, the jury convicted Whitey of 31 out of 32 counts in the indictment. As part of the racketeering charges, the jury convicted Whitey of the murders of 11 victims: Paul McGonigal, Edward Connors, Thomas King, Richard Cattusi, Roger Wheeler, Brian Halloran, Michael Donahue, John Callahan, Arthur Bucky Barrett, John McIntyre, and Deborah Hussey. The jury acquitted Whitey of killing Michael Milano, Al Plummer, William O'Brien, James O'Toole, Al Notoangeli, James Sosa, and Francis Leonard. They reported themselves unable to agree about the murder of Deborah Davis, though Whitey had already been found liable for her death in a civil suit. Following this verdict, Whitey's attorney, J.W. Carney Jr., and Hank Brennan vowed to appeal, citing Casper's ruling, which prevented Whitey from claiming he had been given immunity. On November 4th, 2013, Whitey was sentenced to 2 terms of life imprisonment plus 5 years. Casper told Whitey that such a sentence was necessary given his, quote, unfathomable, end quote, crimes, some which inflicted, quote, agonizing, end quote, suffering on his victims. He was also ordered to forfeit $25.2 million and pay $19.5 million in restitution. Prosecutors in Florida and Oklahoma announced after Whitey's convictions that they would wait until after sentencing concluded before deciding whether or not to prosecute Bulger in their states. Whitey was indicted in Florida for the murder of Callahan and in Oklahoma for the murder of Roger Wheeler, and could have received the death penalty in those states. In September of 2014, Whitey entered the Coleman II United States Penitentiary in Sumnerville, Florida. In October of 2018, he was transferred to the Federal Center in Oklahoma City. Then just a few days later, he was sent to the Federal Penitentiary in West Virginia. According to prison documents obtained by the New York Times, Butler gained a reputation. According to the prison documents obtained by the New York Times, Bulger gained a reputation for his disconcerting behavior during his time in prison. Quote, at the Coleman Prison Complex in Florida in September of 2014, he was disciplined multiple times, including once for masturbating in front of male staff and once in February for threatening a female medical staff member, end quote. Whitey was also in very poor health as he was unable to walk and had a damaged hip, often falling out of bed.
Whitey was transferred from the Federal Transfer Center in Oklahoma City to the United States Penitentiary, Hazleton, in West Virginia on October 29, 2018. At 8:20 a.m. on October 30th, 89-year-old Whitey was found dead. Whitey was found in a wheelchair and he had been beaten to death by multiple inmates, armed with sock-wrapped padlocks and a shiv. His eyes were nearly gouged out and his tongue was almost cut off. A law enforcement official described Whitey as unrecognizable. This was the third homicide in the prison in a 40-day span. Massachusetts-based mafia hitman Photos Freddie Gies was the primary suspect in orchestrating the killing of Whitey. Gies, 51, and his brother were sentenced to life in prison in 2011 for their roles in several violent crimes, including the 2003 killing of Adolfo Big Al Bruno. A Genovese crime family Capo, who was shot in a Springfield, Massachusetts parking lot. According to the ABC News, Whitey's medical status had been lowered in October 2018 before he was transferred. On November 8, 2018, a funeral mass was held for Whitey at Santa Monica St. Eugustine Church in South Boston. Family members, including his brother, former Massachusetts State Senate President William M. Bolger, and the twin sister of Catherine Gregg, attended Whitey's death. Whitey's death came as a relief to many Boston locals, especially for family members of his victims. Stephen Davis, whose sister Deborah was reportedly killed by Whitey in 1981, stated that he died the way I hoped he always was going to die. Bolger is buried at St. Joseph's Cemetery in the Boston neighborhood of West Roxbury. His headstone is blank except for the inscription Bolger. In 2019, the Bolger family filed a wrongful death lawsuit against the Justice Department, alleging that by lowering Whitey's medical status and transferring him to Hazleton, he was deliberately placed in harm's way. There is simply no other explanation for the transfer of someone in his condition and inmate status to be placed in general population of one of the country's most violent federal penitentiaries. The Bolger family sought out $200,000 in damages in January of 2022. U.S. District Judge John Preston Bailey dismissed the lawsuit, ruling federal law did not allow his family the right to sue Bureau of Prison officials because the Congress expressly puts custody of inmates in the hands of the BOP and, quote, had repetitively limited judicial authority to review BOP housing decisions and to entertain claims brought by the prisoners, end quote.
On August 18, 2022, three men were charged in connection with the beating death of Whitey. Fotios Gies, Paul J. Desciogero, and Sean McKinnon. On May 14, 2024, the Department of Justice announced plea agreements with the three had been accepted. On September 6 of 2024, Fotios Gies was sentenced to 25 years imprisonment for the murder of Whitey.
We will be back next week with a new episode. If you find yourself enjoying Mountain State Mysteries, take a second to follow, download, and rate it, and rate the show on your favorite podcast platform. It helps others find good West Virginia true crime podcasts.
Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook, all at Mountain State Mysteries.
Do you have a case you want us to cover? Send us an email at mountainstatemysteries304@gmail.com.
For the show notes, check out our website, mountainstatemysteriespodcast.com.
Mountain State Mysteries is a Mystery Media production.